Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver, Brian Lynn, and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the United States is accusing authoritarian governments around the world of severe human rights violations and abuses. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke this week at the release of the 2019 Country Reports on Human Rights Practices. He told reporters, "Experience teaches that government officials who oppress are also responsible for creating social environments that encourage corruption, violent conflict, and terrorism." The U.S. report examines the Iranian government's reaction to widespread protests that began last November after an increase in fuel prices. Iranian security forces killed nearly 1,500 people and detained 8,600 others, reported international media at the time. There is no evidence that government agencies were seeking independent or impartial investigations into protester deaths, the report said. The government blocked almost all international and local internet connections for most of a week, the U.S. report noted. The report provides an ugly picture of conditions in Iran. It described executions for crimes that failed to meet international legal standards and without fair trials of individuals. The State Department said Iranian officials were responsible for human rights abuses in Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. It criticized Iran's military support for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and pro-Iran militia groups. The U.S. Human Rights Report also looked at China and its mass detention of members of Muslim minority groups in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. China is imprisoning religious minorities in internment camps, part of its historic antipathy to religious believers, Pompeo told reporters in Washington. The U.S. report says Chinese officials reportedly have detained more than 1 million Muslims in efforts to remove religious and ethnic identities. The report said that human rights in China include unlawful killings, forced disappearances, and detention by the government. It noted life-threatening prison and detention conditions, physical attacks on and criminal prosecution of journalists, lawyers, writers, and others, as well as their family members. And it noted China's forcible return of asylum seekers to North Korea. The U.S. report expressed concerns about the openness of the Saudi government about the 2018 killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi by Saudi officials in Turkey. However, the report did not detail the observations of U.S. embassy officials who attended the suspect's trial in Saudi Arabia. The murder of Jamal Khashoggi was an unacceptable crime. We have spoken with the Saudi leadership from the king down about our concerns. The position that we have taken hasn't changed, said Assistant Secretary of State Robert Destro. The U.S. report said the Saudi government, in several cases, did not punish officials accused of human rights abuses, which created an environment of lawlessness.
The spread of the new coronavirus is affecting the work and pay of people around the world. A guide at a popular tourist area in eastern China has not earned any money for 2 months, as tourists are nowhere to be found. A delivery driver in Britain worries about getting sick from the people who sign for their purchases each day. And a server at a restaurant in the American state of Missouri washes his hands more often and simply hopes for the best. Some professionals can work from home or call in sick if they experience signs of COVID-19. The disease the virus causes. But that is not possible for service workers who often come into contact with the public. Their situation is made worse by limited or non-existent sick leave and health insurance. The recommendations on what people should be doing to protect themselves really gives a sharp indication of the divide between white-collar and blue-collar workers, said Shannon Liss Reardon, a workers' rights lawyer in Boston, Massachusetts. White-collar jobs are those that take place in an office or other professional environment. Blue-collar jobs are those that require a person to perform more physical labor of some kind.
In the United States, about 27% of non-government workers do not get paid sick leave, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says. There is no federal sick leave policy in the United States, but 12 of the 50 states, as well as Washington, D.C., require employers to offer paid sick leave. And employers with 50 or more employees are required to offer health insurance. That protection is not extended to part-time or independent workers. Some Democratic lawmakers have proposed legislation to deal with the issue. It would require employers to let workers earn 7 days of paid sick leave. It would also provide an additional 14 days of paid sick leave in the event of a public health emergency, including the current one.
The new virus spread has shown huge holes in healthcare coverage at a time when people may need it most. Most European countries and Canada have universal healthcare systems, but the United States has a mix of public and private insurance.
In France, people have the right not to work and get full pay when they consider their workplaces to be dangerous. Some service workers there have stayed home for a short period because of infection concerns. Workers at the Louvre Museum in Paris refused to work for 2 days. They returned to work only after officials there announced new virus-fighting measures. I'm Brian Lynn.
I'm Katie Weaver.
Blinding Lights by Canadian performer The Weeknd is one of the most popular songs in the world. As of early March, Blinding Lights is at the top of music service Shazam's global top 200 list of popular songs. It is also on the Top Hits 2020 list of Spotify, another music service. Today on Everyday Grammar, we will explain the grammar behind the name of the song and some of its lyrics. Let us begin by examining the song's title, Blinding Lights. The most important word is lights. It is the plural form of the noun light. In English, only certain kinds of words come before nouns. Often, the word that comes before a noun is an adjective. The word blinding is an adjective. It helps modify or change the meaning of the noun lights. The grammatical pattern we find in the song's title would be the same if the adjective changed. In other words, the pattern would still be adjective plus noun. The title could have been flashing lights, blinking lights, or bright lights. But those titles are not nearly as strong as blinding lights. This term suggests that the lights overpower a person. Blinding means so bright or strong that a person cannot see. This idea is important in a song that talks about strong feelings of loneliness and sadness. It is also an important idea for a song set in Las Vegas, Nevada, a city known for strong lights and all kinds of nightlife. We know the song takes place in Las Vegas because the singer uses another name for the city, Sin City. The term appears in the song. Now, let's listen to more of the song. The words, "I've been trying to call," are a kind of informal speech. The statement might become clearer with a few more words.
I have been trying to call.
This is an example of what English teachers call the present perfect progressive. The singer suggests that an event, a telephone call, took place in the past. The weekend suggests he has tried calling many other times up until just recently. Often, when English speakers use the present perfect progressive, they also say an amount of time that they have been doing that activity. For example, you might hear someone say,
Tom has been dancing for 2 hours.
This suggests that Tom began dancing 2 hours ago and continues dancing in the present. Note that in Blinding Lights, the singer did not give a specific amount of time. He suggests that he has been trying to call a person. He does not say for how long, perhaps hours, days, or even weeks. Now, let's compare the two lines.
I have been trying to call.
In the song, the word have is missing. The weekend also combines the words trying to. So, I have been becomes I been, and trying to becomes tryna. You will hear this manner of speaking in all kinds of popular culture, songs, films, and so on. You might also occasionally see it in nonfiction writing that has reported speech. But a word of warning. You should not use some of the ideas that we discussed today on an English exam. For example, teachers and test graders want to see the words trying to instead of tryna. However, if you like listening to music or watching films in English, you should learn to understand how some speakers use different kinds of English. We will end with a few words from the song. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in December of 1941 was one of the most successful surprise attacks in the history of modern warfare. Japanese warships, including several aircraft carriers, crossed the Western Pacific to Hawaii without being seen. They launched their planes on a quiet Sunday morning and attacked the huge American naval and air base at Pearl Harbor.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air. President Roosevelt has just announced.
The attack apparently was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. A Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor naturally would mean war.
Many of the American military personnel were asleep or at church. They were totally unprepared for the attack. In fact, some people outside the base thought the Japanese planes must be new types of American aircraft on training flights. The sounds of guns and bombs soon showed how wrong they were. The Japanese planes sank or seriously damaged six powerful American battleships in just a few minutes. They killed more than 3,000 sailors. They destroyed or damaged half the American airplanes in Hawaii. American forces, caught by surprise, were unable to offer much of a fight. Japanese losses were very low. There was so much destruction at Pearl Harbor that officials in Washington did not immediately reveal the full details to the public. They were afraid that Americans might panic if they learned the truth about the loss of so much military power. The following day, President Franklin Roosevelt went to Congress to ask for a declaration of war against Japan.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. We will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
The Senate approved President Roosevelt's request without any opposition. In the House of Representatives, only one congressman objected to the declaration of war against Japan. Three days later, Germany and Italy declared war on the United States. Congress reacted by declaring war on those two countries. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor ended the long American debate over whether to become involved in the Second World War. American politicians and citizens had argued for years about whether to remain neutral or to fight to help Britain and France and other friends. Japan's aggressive attack at Pearl Harbor united Americans in a common desire for military victory. It made Americans willing to do whatever was necessary to win the war. And it pushed America into a kind of world leadership that its people had never known before. President Roosevelt and his advisors had to make an important decision about how to fight the war. Would the United States fight Japan first, or Germany, or both at the same time? Japan's attack had brought America into the war, and it had severely damaged American military power. But Roosevelt decided not to strike back at Japan immediately. He would use most of his forces to fight Germany. There were several reasons for Roosevelt's decision. First, Germany already controlled much of Europe, as well as much of the Atlantic Ocean. Roosevelt considered this a direct threat, and he worried about possible German intervention in Latin America. Second, Germany was an advanced industrial nation. It had many scientists and engineers. Its factories were modern. Roosevelt was concerned that Germany might be able to develop deadly new weapons, such as an atomic bomb, if it was not stopped quickly. Third, Britain historically was one of America's closest allies, and the British people were united and fighting for their lives against Germany. This was not true in Asia. Japan's most important opponent was China. But China's fighting forces were weak and divided and could not offer strong opposition to the Japanese. Adolf Hitler's decision to break his non-aggression treaty with Soviet leader Joseph Stalin and attack the Soviet Union made Roosevelt's choice final. The American president recognized that the Germans would have to fight on two fronts, in the West against Britain and in the East against Russia. He decided it was best to attack Germany while its forces were divided. So the United States sent most of its troops and supplies to Britain to join the fight against Germany. American military leaders hoped to attack Germany quickly by launching an attack across the English Channel. Stalin also supported this plan. Soviet forces were suffering terrible losses from the Nazi attack and wanted the British and Americans to fight the Germans on the West. However, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and other leaders opposed launching an invasion across the English Channel too quickly. They worried that such an invasion might fail while the Germans were still so strong, and they knew this would mean disaster. For this reason, British and American forces decided instead to attack the Italian and German troops occupying North Africa. British forces had been fighting the Italians and Germans in North Africa since late 1940.
They fought the Italians first in Egypt and Libya. British forces had successfully pushed the Italians across Libya. They killed more than 10,000 Italian troops and captured more than 130,000 prisoners. But the British success did not last long. Hitler sent one of his best commanders, General Erwin Rommel, to take command of the Italians. Rommel was brave and smart. He pushed the British back from Libya to the border with Egypt. And in a giant battle at Tobruk, he destroyed or captured more than 800 of Britain's 900 tanks. Rommel's progress threatened Egypt and the Suez Canal. So Britain and the United States moved quickly to send more troops and supplies to stop him. Slowly, British forces, led by General Bernard Montgomery, pushed Rommel and the Germans back to Tripoli in Libya. In November 1942, American and British forces, commanded by General Dwight Eisenhower, landed in Northwest Africa. They planned to attack Rommel from the west, while Montgomery attacked him from the east. But Rommel knew Eisenhower's troops had done little fighting before. So he attacked them quickly before they could launch their own attack. A major battle took place at Kasserine Pass in western Tunisia. American forces suffered heavy losses, but in the end, Rommel's attack failed. 3 months later, American forces joined with Montgomery's British troops to force the Germans in North Africa to surrender. The Battle of North Africa was over. The Allied forces of Britain and the United States had regained control of the southern Mediterranean Sea. They could now attack Hitler's forces in Europe from the south. The Allies wasted no time. They landed on the Italian island of Sicily in July of 1943. German tanks fought back, but the British and American forces moved ahead. Soon they captured Sicily's capital, Palermo, and within weeks they forced the German forces to leave Sicily for the Italian mainland. In late July, Italy's dictator, Benito Mussolini, was overthrown and placed in prison. The Germans rescued him and helped him establish a new government protected by German troops. But still, the Allies attacked. They crossed to the Italian mainland. The Germans fought hard, and for some time they prevented the Allied troops from breaking out of the coastal areas. The fighting grew bloodier. A fierce battle took place at Monte Cassino. Thousands of soldiers lost their lives. But slowly, the Allies advanced north through Italy. They captured Rome in June of 1944, and they forced the Germans back into the mountains of northern Italy. The Allies would not gain complete control of Italy until the end of the war, but they had succeeded in increasing their control of the Mediterranean and pushing back the Germans. One reason Hitler's forces were not stronger in Africa and Italy was because German armies also were fighting in Russia.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.